1850, 715-815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And Joe at RT.ie. If you look up our Twitter feed at the minute, at RT Liveline or at Joe Liveline, we've tweeted that photograph. It's from the Mirror today, but it's of a very, very substantial-looking Jaws-like shark, which was caught by an amateur fisherman, but a long-standing lifelong fisherman who we've been talking to, and we hope to talk to him again in the next few minutes. But he's adamant. First of all, it was an incredible feat to catch this shark. He's about 6 foot, and I'd say the shark is about 9 foot from head to tail, so to speak, and I can't imagine the weight of it. And he's adamant that he put the shark back into the sea after he landed it on his boat, and he makes, well, hopefully you'll come on and let him make the points himself in the next few minutes. Deirdre, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
You saw this photograph.
I did.
And can you describe it, and then, if you wish, please, and then explain why you're upset by it?
Well, it's clearly an animal, a sentient. Huge, very bloodied at the mouth. Obviously exhausted. I think he pulled it out of the water twice. And as you said, you know, it must have been a hell of a battle. And eventually landed this beautiful creature, mm-hmm. which is huge, huge, mm-hmm. In the boat, which, I can't imagine the state that the thresher shark was in after that, but I would imagine that the chances of survival, I mean, I don't know because I'm not a fisherman, but I would think they would be slim. The idea of landing it for a selfie, because usually, usually what they do is, you know, they mm-hmm. don't bring them on board. They land them to the side of the craft and then they let them go. But he brought it on board to for the delectation of social media. And I just think, you know, showing off your catch on social media should never override the welfare of the animal.
Is that not, since photography has been invented, let alone selfies, has that not been the wont of fishermen and fisherwomen? When they get a catch, they hold it. They say, look at what I caught. Look at the size of it.
Yeah, but I think, you know, I think we really need to be evolving as regards, the way we treat, you know, any sentience. Our oceans are in jeopardy and, and this shark is endangered. Like, the thresh shark is, he's an endangered species. They declined by 97%, imagine, between 2002 and 2005. So every shark is important. You know, and
but this fisherman we've been talking to him, as I say, we hope to be able to get through to him in the next few minutes. But he's adamant, and we won't name him. But he's adamant that he put the first of all, if he had brought the fish, the shark, this massive 15-foot shark, uh-huh. can't imagine uh-huh. what a way back into land, he would have it would have been the catch of the year in terms of. You know, measurements and weight, and the fact that it was caught by a line, by a fishing rod.
Yeah, but I think.
But
I think
he didn't. He said he cares about fish, and he put the fish back into the sea.
Well, that's the way he looks at it. But I mean, from I think Blue Planet Society were absolutely right to call it out. I think fundamentally, it's an education. We have to change the way we treat oceans, and we have to. And I talked to you before about Seaspiracy and watching it, and I think that's a stepping stone to the way we treat our oceans and the way we treat. You know, and I think it's the wrong message. It's kind of trophy hunting. And also, if you remember back in March, there was all the outcry about Gordon Elliott, and I think there's a little bit of that in it. You know, this kind of triumphalism and. But I think we have to really, you know, get beyond that and teach respect for and understanding.
But when you say Deirdre, that this mammal is a sentient being, mm-hmm. what do you mean by that? What does that mean?
Well, it feels pain. I'm sure wants to live, fought for a long, long time to live.
Yeah, but every
feeds young. I know, but like,
yeah,
that's another day's work. We might disagree on that, but like, I would think, you know, anything, you know, that wants to live and feeds young, and you know, and sharks are sometimes, you know,
so we shouldn't
are
eat,
quite social creatures.
So we shouldn't eat meat. We shouldn't
well,
eat
I
fish.
Don't. I don't. But I'm not. You know. I suppose that's another. Yeah. And you're right in the sense that maybe calling out this if you do eat fish is a bit problematic. Mm. You know. But that's my thinking on it. And I don't eat fish because I think that our oceans are in decline, and I don't think we realise it. You know.
And do you eat meat?
I don't have them for many years.
Okay. Yeah. But you're vegan?
Is yeah. Okay. Eat everything that doesn't have a face.
Yeah, but I was listening to a debate here tonight on the Moral Maze on Radio 4, and it was about this whole thing about sentient beings.
Mm-hmm.
And are animals sentient? And one contributor made the point, if you truly believe that, which I don't doubt you do, by the way, if you truly believe in the meaning of the word sentient, then you would be, there would be war over us killing animals in any shape or form, in any forum, in any, for food, for entertainment, for challenges, for sport or whatever. If you really believe these animals are sentient and fish and mammals are sentient beings.
Yeah, well, I think we do, and I think that's why we don't, I think if you have any dealings with equines or bovines or sheep or, you know, I mean, you know, they have the same physiology as us. And I mean, that's, you know, I think, and I think the more we evolve as a society and as a, you know, we don't have to inflict pain, and we don't have to, you know, we don't have to go down that road. I mean, we've lived for many, many years, you know, in without doing that, and we're healthy and
well. I must say, in fairness to the fisherman, the animal, insofar as I can do, the animal looks alive on the boat.
Looks very bloodied, but I mean, I don't know, so I'm not.
Well, we'll try and find out, because he's the only one who can tell us when they.
But of course, he doesn't know, I suppose, what happened then when he reintroduced the shark to the water.
The oceans are predaceous, you know? at the best.
Oh, they
times.
Are, but that's a whole other. Yeah, that's yeah. fine. That's I mean, that's nature, but. What we're doing is not natural.
It's not natural.
Taking a selfie of a.
Well, in fairness, it's not a selfie. Like, you couldn't take a selfie. The shark is so big. Someone else took the photograph, obviously.
Okay. Well,
So, in other words, there was other people on the boat. I don't know whether they were adults.
Yeah, but he wanted a picture with the shark. So, yes, maybe it's not a selfie, but it's I suppose it's proof that. But yeah, that's where I'd be coming from, Joe. I just think. I just think it's not, and I think that was well said on Twitter from many, you know.
Well, it's unleashed. I see now in the last few minutes even an incredible Twitter storm. But is that fair to fishermen?
Well, I suppose I'm not going to arbitrate that because it's clearly upsetting a lot of people, and I think and I'd be one of them. You know, but then again, I suppose, as you said yourself, if you're a fish eater, you know, you're part of this, you know, this fishing industry, which is, you know, absolutely, completely ruining our oceans.
Yeah, but that recent documentary on Netflix about fish.
Which that was Seaspiracy you're talking about, is it?
Yeah, Seaspiracy. That's been widely discredited. Widely.
I think like vested interests are always going
in terms of the statistics, by the statistics that they're using. Stay with us, Deirdre. I know you shouldn't have to carry the banner single-handedly on this. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 is our text. Mike Bourke, Mike.
Hi, how are you, Joe?
Okay, you saw this photograph now, tell us.
I didn't see it, actually. Okay. I'm just going on what that lady's described, what state the fish or the shark was in after the hook was removed from its mouth.
Okay.
And the point I'd like to make is, how did he get the hook out of its mouth? That's what I'd like to know. Because to tell you the truth, Joe, most fishermen don't give a damn how they get the hook out of the mouth, out of a fish's mouth. They just... Well, as that lady said, the shark looked like it had irreparable damage, you know?
And if it was a smaller fish, Mike would have caused such a rumpus.
Well, I'm not sure. You see, it's all in perception, Joe. You know, because sharks are an endangered species. Well, most wildlife now is bordering on endangered. We just love to hunt. This prehistoric thing we have in our genes about hunting animals—it's beyond. It is beyond me, really. You know, I really don't get it. You know.
But is it not an achievement in itself to get a 500-pound fish, a shark, that's, what, 15 foot, into your boat using a fishing rod? Is that not an achievement?
I'm not sure where the achievement is. I really don't. You're taking a beautiful killing machine, an apex top predator in the ocean. You're taking it out of its environment, its home. It's like someone coming into your home and grabbing you by the necktie and pulling you outside into the road.
We've been speaking to the man who caught the fish. Okay, I won't give his given the Twitter storm that's emerging now. We'll call him Peter, but we have his name and address. And he tells us, I am a fisherman, angler, and I fished for Ireland in competition. I recently caught a treasure shark off the southwest coast of Ireland on Sunday. I caught it, pulled it over the board, took a picture and threw it back into the sea. The photos were published to social media as I was amazed by the size of the shark. I've been an angler for 40 years. I go out catching small sharks normally. I've never caught a shark like this before. My children were with me on the boat and they stayed inside the cabin when catching the shark for safety. So there was no issue there. He says there's no health and safety risk to himself or his friend, who was a fisherman from another part of the world, when bringing the shark on board. He saw the comments on social media of what people thought of him, but he said they can have their own views. He said he could have caught, killed it and brought it back to shore because it would have been a world record. He believes it would have been a world record. He says he didn't because he cares about the fish. More and more sharks, he told us, are coming to Ireland. He says that there are very little signs that shark are nearby. You have to go out and attract them. In other words, it's not easy. Niamh, your point, please.
Hi, Joe. Good afternoon.
Your point, please.
Well, I just wanted to say, having looked at the photograph, that there's blood on the shark. The shark, I'm sure, was in pain. Any creature like that you would drag, I mean, the whole weight of its body being pulled up by a hook onto a boat, a photograph being taken, and then it just being tossed aside. And the guy said he cared about the welfare of the shark. I'm not sure about that.
What are you sure the sharks experience pain the way we do? Because that's what you're saying, isn't it?
Well, they have a central nervous system.
Yeah.
And the nerves have the sense to feel the pain. So that's how you know feeling.
Yeah, but how do you know they experience pain the way we... I know you're talking about A into B equals C, but how do you know they experience pain the way we experience pain? Which could be horrific, as you know. That's what people immediately hear when they. But how do we know?
How do we know?
Where does that leave us in terms of the world? Like, do we not? Like, sharks aren't human. Animals aren't human by definition, obviously. But we keep saying they're sentient beings, as if they're close to being human. They're no more. They're not close to being human. They're a few million, hundreds of millions of years, maybe. Down the road, but they're not close to being human. So
that means wipe them out then, willy nilly. It's just because they're not human.
But they're not. You don't wipe them out because they reproduce.
Of course, they don't reproduce fast enough.
Plenty of things that reproduce are getting wiped out. Plenty of animals that reproduce are getting wiped out. Look at the elephants, the tigers. Look at all these animals that are being sent into extinction. The orangutans, they all reproduce.
The elephant is not close to extinction, I'm sorry.
It is, Joe.
Elephants are absolutely close to extinction.
Yes, exactly. I'm afraid you've got to brush up on this small bit on this.
Yeah, but Pete, why are elephants in danger then?
Because people are paying thousands of dollars to shoot them. There's companies. Well,
yeah, but they're not classified. In fairness now, okay, maybe they're not classified as being close to extinction. They're classified as being.
Can I just say, let's put it this way, because you're talking about a shark, and I know I can sense that you're feeling far removed from the shark. All right. So let's say it's your pet, it's your cat or your dog.
And I don't know anyone has sharks as pets.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. Let's just, because you're asking me about, do they have feelings? Why should we care, basically? Because we don't know if they have any feelings. So let's just
if they have feelings as we do. We don't know if they experience pain as
one
we
person,
do.
But even with people, the way one person experiences pain can be different to the way another person experiences pain. And when you're talking about physical pain, there's mental pain, there's emotional pain, there's loads of different kinds of pain. And there's loads of different experiences in relation to that. So if my dog went out and bit onto a hook and somebody lifted my dog up with a rod or whatever up with the hook in the roof of its mouth, I'm pretty sure my dog would feel pain. It probably wouldn't even be screaming because it has a hook in its mouth. And I know that people will be outraged at that comparison. And for some reason, people are able to switch off when it comes to something like a pig or a shark or a chicken or a cow or a lamb, which is a baby animal. And people are, oh my God, those puppies, you know, when puppies are being stolen from people's yards and the poor puppies and the poor babies. And yet they're able to eat lamb on a Sunday or whatever. Mm. And I just, for me, as a person, I don't understand how people just don't feel the connection. They don't see the connection. This animal, this animal, this animal, they all feel pain. Of course they do. And they have a central nervous system.
And if you had to, for example, should animals ever be culled?
No, I don't think so. I think that's outrageous. And I think...
let the deer in the Phoenix Park ramble and live in Ballyfermot.
Well, which was there first? The deer in the land or the people in the urban sprawl?
Are you for real?
Where is the problem?
Niamh, are you for real?
Yes, I'm very much for real.
Their habitats
are being taken up by humans.
You're saying all animals in Ireland should be allowed run wild. Should never be culled.
Yeah, I don't believe that any animal should be
culled. Sorry, could I come in here, Joe?
No, I will come back in a sec. Jim is in Letterkenny. Jim.
Sorry.
Yes, Joe.
I'll come back in a sec, Deirdre, I promise. Jim, you're a fisherman.
Yeah, and I have a shark.
And have you seen this photograph on the boat?
No, I haven't seen it, but I've been on boats.
So much for my Twitter feed, so.
Mostly blue sharks. Now, I believe this one is a thresher.
A thresher, yeah.
But my understanding at the start, and everybody's entitled to their opinion, of course, is the lady mentioned about this shark, we should have the rights to feed its young and all. My understanding is that the sharks are born alive, and it's up to them to fend themselves as soon as they're born. So there's no feeding off them. Yes, whenever they are, before they're born, of course, the mother's feeding them internally, but that's the first thing I would say on it. The second thing is, any sharks that I've seen landed, now mostly blue sharks, they have been taken in, weighed, measured, and released again. And I don't mean just harshed over the side of the boat. They would be placed into the water with respect, and in fact, at times they would hold the shark till it starts naturally, you know, breathing water again, or you know, taking it in the water for the oxygen and that. And I mean, there's a man that's never off TV. He's Jeremy Wade as well, River Monsters. And some of the stuff he catches. Jeremy Wade. That's River Monsters is the name of the program.
Okay, that went over my head. Yeah.
Yeah.
I must have been washing my hair. That
sharks. Sharks, rays, every sort of fish from maybe 2 or 3 pound weight up to 3,000 pound weight. And
what do you think of Niamh's point that all animals are sentient beings and should never be killed in any circumstances, including culling?
Well, I don't know what you do in Ireland because, by God, sure, you'd have cattle running about everywhere if you and most of them cattle wouldn't be there, only four they're being reared.
Come in there, second joke.
Mike.
It's like the in Asia now, Southeast Asia, Philippines, places like that. They actually kill millions of sharks. They cut their dorsal fin off, and then they toss them back in the water.
That's the dorsal fin.
That's done deliberately. they target them deliberately with nips and long lines.
Because it's a delicacy in Japan or whatever.
Yep. And threw over the side again.
Yeah. Niamh, do you think rats should be culled?
Well, rats are passing, off of diseases on to people. So I don't know if
so
people
do
actually
deer.
Call
deer,
rats.
Deer can pass on Lyme's disease.
Can I make a suggestion about the deer? Because I haven't lived in Asia for a long time where they poison street dogs and they do terrible things to street dogs and cats.
But we don't.
Down.
We don't. No, we do the opposite.
No,
we love animals.
My point. Can I just make my point? That there's plenty of charities over there that they have a catch and neuter and release program, so that they are spaying and neutering the cats and the dogs to keep the populations down, as opposed to culling or poisoning or whichever way you want to wrap it up, so that you're not killing the animal, but in fact that you're keeping the population down in a kind, that's a humane thing to do. I don't like to kill any animals. And I think there's other solutions, rather than killing them. People were incensed as well at the thought of killing the seals. And I think a lot of that was because they see the seals as being little puppies of the sea, And anytime someone sees a seal, they're like, oh, it's so cute, so lovely. And they didn't like when that was in the media a couple of weeks ago about killing or culling the seals.
Niamh, I presume we should shut down the zoo.
But sure, who's killing or culling or anything in the zoo? The zoo, actually, even though I don't like the idea of the animals being caged or fenced.
But why would you cage sentient beings for others' entertainment?
Good point.
Most of them were born in the zoo.
However, they are able to conduct research. They're being kindly looked after. And a lot of the time, they're able to help breeding programs of animals that are endangered.
I'll go back. Jim in Letterkenny, this is the statement we got from the fisherman. That he could have... there was no health and safety risk to anyone on the boat. It was an incredible... He didn't set out. He was out looking for smaller sharks. He'd never in his 40 years seen anything like it. If he had caught it, killed it and brought it back to shore, it would have been a world record, but he decided not to. He decided to put the 15-foot, 500-pound shark, take it off his rod and throw it back overboard.
Well, Joe, can I just... I mean,
do
that
you,
was some
do
show
you
admi- respect.
Do you admire him for that?
I do. And years ago, now I'm going back maybe 40 years ago, a little bit more maybe, there used to be angling festivals in a lot of ports, including there was one in Port Niblah, and the fish were all taken back to the weigh-in, and there was a mountain of fish left on the pier. And if anybody wanted any of them, they'd take them with them. But there's a mountain of fish. That doesn't happen anymore now. The fish are, you get points for each fish, and the whoever's aboard checks, the weight of them, the size of them, the blah, 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 take photographs, and there is no fish taken back. I would also say that even today now, and all the rivers here, or most of the rivers, in Donegal, you are only allowed to use barbless hooks, no barb on them, and it's catch and release. If you're caught with salmon on a catch and release river, you probably might never get fishing again.
Okay, and Niamh, do you think, given what Jim said there, those regulations, do you think we're a nation of animal lovers?
That's a massive generalisation. Maybe not. No.
Okay. Deirdre, do you think we're a nation of animal lovers in general, compared to other countries?
Well, like with all respect, I think you've gone down a whole other road of...
I'm gone down a rabbit hole.
You are, I think you are. Okay. I think like that we started off talking about this, this poor that was taken.
But you see, in fairness...
But I think it's
people...
disrespectful. Can I tell you something? I think it's disrespectful to do that, in the same way as Gordon Elliott sat on top of the horse. Okay. I think now we're evolving and we realise that, there's been 2.7 trillion fish caught, yearly. Wow. 2.7 trillion.
But on board
a lot of that is bottom trawling.
But Deirdre, the state,
Can I just make the point, please? Okay. That they, they're devastating the ocean floor, coral reefs, marine diversity. Like if you do some research into this, it's incredible what's happening. So I think, as opposed to talking about, whether we believe sentience or not, and all of that, I think the bigger picture is. that we have to, you know, we have to change and we have to, you know, we have to eat differently and regard our planet differently.
Can I come in there,
and
Joe,
I think
please?
I think that's the big thing, that's the big learning curve that we all need, you know, and not to go down rabbit holes about smaller things.
The rabbit hole I was going to go down was the government and the state agencies, Board B of Food Ireland, etc. Mm-hmm. They're paying for advertisements at the moment to encourage people to eat fish.
I know.
Yeah, they are.
And what do you think of that, Deirdre?
Joe, could I come in there, please?
Okay, Jim Letterkenny, the fisherman.
Yeah, Joe, what would happen tomorrow morning if you said you can't kill any animals, wild, domestic, or whatever? You're chatting about from a vegan point of view, and as I say, absolutely everyone's entitled to their own opinion.
Yeah.
What would you do if you had no vegetables or anything like that to eat, because animals that you're not allowed to remove or do anything to have come on and ate them during the night? So what are you supposed to do? Do you get up in the morning, you look out, and your vegetable patch is destroyed, and you don't beat me, so you're going to say, oh, sure,
hold on, people go to the shop to buy their meat and their fish, and they also go to the shop to buy their fruit and their vegetables. So just because you're not eating meat and fish doesn't mean that you don't have anything else to eat.
No, but Jim's point is, if you let animals run wild, they will eat. Yeah. The cabbage, and they will eat it.
What are you going to cut up?
Maybe secure your garden.
Okay, that's it for the time being. Back after this, Joe with RT Daddy, go to Mila Mocker. We hope to talk to the fisherman who got the fish, because he has, in what he said to us, he has a very strong argument and he should be allowed to make it. Joe with RT Daddy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And 5 and 5 1's a text number, and Joe at rt.ie. Angelie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And Angelie, I'm so sorry what's happened to you and your friend Jan Krutt. Can you tell us what happened in St. Stephen's Green in the centre of Dublin a couple of days ago?
Yeah, so it was Monday evening at around 8:30.
Okay.
We were just in the park, walking there, and then the security came and they said that they're like about to close the park. So we were about to leave from there, and we were just going towards the gate, and we were just near the entrance. So I saw a group like coming from the back, teenagers group. So I told my friend that I think we should like leave and we will just walk away. So we were just walking and somebody like came from the back and started hitting my friend. And started punching him. There was only one person at that time. And then after that, like, there are three or four people started punching him from the back, on his mouth, on his face, everywhere. And we were, like, still trying to walk from there. And then we were walking. And then somebody, like, you know, touched my backpack, which I was carrying with me. So just to check it, like, what is it, I turned around. And when I just turned around, there was somebody... he or she, I don't know, they thrown a can of beer or a drink on my eyes, on my right eye.
Okay.
And it was full of it, so it like, you know, hit it so hard and I couldn't see after that at all. And the pain was so severe that I was just crying and yelling for help for there. Then people gathered around and they like called the guards and they called the security and ambulance. We were, like, there for, I think, 1.5 hours till the guards arrived there. And the ambulance didn't arrive even after, like, 2 hours. So from there, we had to go to the hospital straight away on our own. So we went to the hospital and then get it checked. And then they gave me, like, the appointment for the next day for the eye specialist because it was so severe.
Yeah,
so for the next day, I have gone to the eye specialist. They checked it like thoroughly. And then after checking it, he told me that there's a retinal bruise on your retina.
Okay.
So it will take about like, I think, 1 or 2 months. Or some in some cases, it didn't heal properly. So that can cause retinal detachment. And that can affect my vision in future.
Was Anjali and what age are the two of you?
We both are 24.
Okay. What age were the generally? What age were this group that attacked you?
They were about like 15 to 18 of age.
And many were in the group, Anjali.
Yeah, they were in the group like I think 7, 8 around. And three or four girls and all other boys.
Okay. And did they say anything to you as during this completely unprovoked attack?
No, they were like just, you know, abusing. And after that, they started beating. And then, yeah, there was a girl. She shouted from the back that just spoil her face.
Get her face?
Yeah, spoil her face, yeah.
Good God.
And
Yankrut, how was he? Because he got a severe beating to the face.
Yeah, he has beaten into his face, so he couldn't eat for like 5 to 7 days. Since then, he's not able to eat properly right now as well.
And how are you? How are you afterwards? How are you sleeping? How are you?
It's very painful. Like, it's been 1 week, but still it's very painful. I cannot move my eyeball to the right side because it's paining a lot. And it's all red from inside.
And have you spoken? And it was last Monday at 8:30. Yeah, so it's nearly 9 days ago. But have you spoken to your families in India? Have you told them what happened?
Yeah, I told them all on that day itself. So they're very worried from there. They want me to come to India and get a check there.
And are they anxious for you to come home?
Yeah, they are.
And but when is your course at Griffith College? When is that finishing?
Actually, I already graduated. I'm just waiting for my graduation ceremony. It will happen in December.
Okay. Now, you say this is St. Stephen's Green in the centre of Dublin. It's 8:30 on a Monday night, last Monday week, effectively. And you say the Gardaí, there was no Gardaí.
No, there was no.
And are you sure the Gardaí
came like after 1.5 hour?
Okay, and the Gardaí were called, were they, Anjali?
I didn't call them. The other people called them because I was not in a position to do anything. I was like, you know, on the floor and like I was screaming and crying that I couldn't see anything and it's paining a lot. I don't want to lose my eye. And I was like that at that time.
Oh, God. So the Gardaí, they came after 1.5 hours. The ambulance was phoned and they didn't arrive at all.
Yeah, they didn't arrive.
And how did you get to the hospital?
I took a bus from there because there was no taxi even. We tried to book a taxi, but it was showing like 15 minutes, 20 minutes. So we walked to the bus stop and then we went through the bus.
But Yankrut would have been, I've seen the photographs, they're horrific. Yankrut would have been bleeding heavily.
Yeah, he was like bleeding for almost 2 hours straight.
So he's sitting and you're sitting thinking your eyesight has been permanently damaged. And in pain.
Yeah.
This completely unprovoked attack by a group of 7 or 8 15-year-olds who beat you up, who one of them shouted, get her face, which is horrific, and in itself, apart from anything else. Yankrut got severely beaten around the face, which drew a lot of blood and a lot of injuries. And you had to make your own way by bus to St. James's Hospital.
Yeah.
What, 2 hours after the attack?
2 hours after the attack, yeah. We had to wait for like 2 hours there. We thought there would be an ambulance or something, but they didn't arrive, so we had to go by our own.
And did any of the passers-by, any of the good Samaritans who helped you, did they offer to take
you?
Yeah,
like, so they were like, I think, a group of 5-6 people. There were 3 girls and 2-3 boys. They tried to help us. They were there since the security came.
Yeah.
They tried to help us a lot. They were talking to me and then cleaning my face.
They were very good. Okay.
Yeah, they were very nice. Yeah.
And how long were you in St. James's Hospital for in the accident and emergency unit?
Yeah, I had gone to the emergency unit and I waited like for 2-3 hours to get it checked there as well.
So this teenage gang, did they at all make any reference to your colour, Anjali?
No.
Okay. So did they steal anything?
They didn't steal anything, but yeah, my friend was like wearing his earphones, Bluetooth earphones.
Yeah.
After that, we did not have that, and we couldn't find it in the park as well. After the attack, so, and they tried to like, you know, pull my backpack from the backside because I put my phone in there.
But you distinctly heard somebody shouting, get her face.
Yeah.
And
there was
how,
a girl.
How is Yankrut?
Who was shouting there.
How is Yankrut now?
He's better, but still he couldn't eat properly. He's in pain.
He's very shook. And how long have you been in Ireland?
It's going to be 2 years now.
And anything like this ever happened before?
No, nothing like this. But yeah, I have like got about like so many incidents. People are like, you know, abusing from the back. And yeah.
What type of abuse?
Just abusing. Like, you know, there was a girl, like I was traveling through Temple Bar. I used to live there before. Mm. So there was somebody, there was like two guys. They were like, oh my God, slut is going around. And like these type of comments.
Oh God. And has anything like that ever happened to you in India?
No, not at all. That's why I was like, I thought that India is like, you know, not so safe. Mm-hmm. But after this incident, what I think is it's more safe for me than here. Because I'm like, you know, even after that incident, I couldn't even like go out. And even if I go out, I look at all the people like somebody can do anything to me.
Yeah. Okay, Anjali, have the Gardaí come back to you?
Sorry?
Have the Gardaí come back?
Yeah, they contacted me today as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anjali, we try and find out why it took so long for you to be attended to. That's a horrific attack on two innocent people in the centre of the capital. Anjali, kind regards to you and indeed to your friend Yankrut. Thank you both. Thank you both.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And just to say, we've been on to Dublin Fire Brigade to find out why last Monday week at 8:30 at night time in the centre of the capital, top of Grafton Street, St Stephen's Green, two young people who were, one of them was thought she was blinded, as you heard, in terrible pain. The other one, because they said, get her face. These group of seven young people attacked them, get her face. The other man was bleeding profusely. There, we have photographs of Anjali's eye, but I haven't tweeted it. I don't know if they've tweeted it upstairs, but during the break I was looking. I don't know you could tweet it. It's so horrific. But we'd love to know from Dublin Fire Brigade what happened that an ambulance never turned up and the two people who were assaulted were actually had to get the bus to a hospital because they couldn't secure a taxi. Now, I remember when I was in Mumbai a decade ago, one thing that struck me was the emergency services were third world. If you were knocked down on the street, you could ring an ambulance, but you wouldn't get one because it didn't exist. And your only hope was for someone to bundle you into a car or a taxi and take you to hospital. For two young people to be savagely beaten on the streets of Dublin and an ambulance never to turn up is... Now, maybe there could be a mix-up and who was phoned or whatever. But anyway, another unprovoked attack. Mary, good afternoon. Where did this happen?
Hi, Joe, yeah, this happened down at the Bord Gáis Theatre. We lived there just off Sir John Rogerson's Quay behind Milano's there.
Yeah.
And so the Bord Gáis Theatre, then you have the big fresh supermarket store beside where the red towers are, you know, the red poles.
Yeah, it's a great spot,
Yeah, it is. It is a good spot. But the kids kind of jump in and out of the water there summer times, and they're all in wetsuits. So, and if they were just doing that, sure, that'd be fine. But it's never straightforward like that. My son now is 12, and he was going to Gaelic training, and he was on his bike, and he had his backpack on his back with his boots in it. And he got as far as fresh, and he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. He walked right into a load of these lads that had gotten... You know, they were at fresh, there's about 12, between 10 and 12 of them, the guard said, all in wetsuits. And one of them just came up to him and punched him right in the face. And then another lad had a full-size can of Coke and was ready to smash him into the face, the other side of his face with the can of Coke. Only a lady happened to see him and came over and started screaming and shouting at the lads and kind of held my son aside. And they ran off. We ended up going to the guards. We reported it to the guards. We live here. We're living here over 12 years now. And we've just noticed, certainly, definitely this year more than any year, the antisocial behaviour has been just off the chart. You know, like, I mean, he was 12, you know, and he was, really, really upset. It's knocked his confidence hugely about going out. Now, in fairness, he's still going out.
CCTV?
There was CCTV, but obviously we weren't allowed to see it due to GDPR, but the guards was able to talk us through it, and that was awful.
Okay, stay with us, Mary. Helen Walsh just contacted us. She witnessed Angeli's attack. Helen, thank you so much for contacting us. What happened, Helen?
Hi, yeah. So I was sitting in Stephen's Green with a few of my pals, and we saw this big massive group of kind of young kids all drinking and kind of just acting the maggot then. And we saw kind of the attack then, and as soon as it happened, I rang 999.
Oh, well done, well done.
Just because you could see from kind of their attitudes that they were going to get aggressive, and I obviously didn't want to see that. So you
rang 999. Did you ask for the Gardaí or ambulance? But at that stage, it was the Gardaí, I presume. Okay.
Yeah.
And what did they say?
They didn't really understand the severity of the situation. I gave all the information. I told them where we were, where the attack was happening. Mm-hmm. And I kind of told them that they needed to get there quite quickly.
Yeah.
And the responder was kind of like, oh, yeah, no, we'll send someone in a while. And I kind of said, no, you need to send someone now before it gets worse. But there was no response then.
Well, did they say to you, do we need, because they often do we need to get to call an ambulance?
No, they didn't say anything like that.
Did they say to you, many people are attacking these two individuals?
Yeah, and I told them that there was about 7 or 8
okay.
Kind of ganging up on this couple, that it was bad. I said he was already bleeding and she was getting hit with, I thought it was like a Hennessy bottle that she was after getting hit by.
The can of beer in the eye.
Yeah.
We tweeted a photograph of her eye there, and that show live then at RTE Live Line. It's shocking.
Yeah.
So you were pleading to the 999 responder.
Yeah.
And they said
that they would send someone in a while.
You think that was a phrase that was used, Helen?
It wasn't them words exactly, but
okay.
It was.
But that was the sense you got.
Yeah, they didn't say.
They didn't say there's somebody on their way.
No.
They didn't say. Do you think that people, if someone is bleeding, an ambulance is pretty. Did anyone dial 999 for an ambulance? Do we know?
I'm not too sure because, after I hung up with the responder, I heard another young lad calling the guards then. So I'm not too sure.
So the Gardaí would have got a number of 999 calls.
Yeah.
And how long did you hang around for, Helen, or stay around for?
I was there for about a half an hour because I wanted to see if the guards actually showed up. But by then, the kind of park warden came around and told us that they were closing the park, so we had to leave.
And was the park warden aware of the attack?
I'm not too sure. They didn't really make us aware of a situation that had happened. They were kind of just going around clearing everyone out.
Mm. But by the way, did the attack take place in Stephen's Green?
Yeah, just inside the gate there.
I know. But the authorities in Stephen's Green didn't feel they've any responsibility to try and deal with it. Maybe they didn't know where it happened. Maybe the couple could have phoned as far as the staff in Stephen's Green, the couple could have belted into the Stephen's Green after they were attacked. What age of the gang do you think, Helen?
Well, the ages that me and my friends put on them was maybe 14, 15.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
And 7 of them jumping on Angeli and her friend.
And the thing is, it seemed like they were enjoying the fact, they didn't know what the reasoning behind the attack was. They just were getting a bit of a kick out of it, which is awful to see.
By giving people a kicking. And remember, they also said, Angeli heard them say, get her face.
Yeah. I actually heard that girl screaming that. And I remember looking at my friend being like, that's really bad. This is going to get worse.
That's disgusting.
Yeah.
Get the young one. And they did get her face, by the way. They got her eye. Stay with us, Helen. Frankie Reevy is in Clonus. Frankie, your point, please.
Joe, how are you? Joe, Joe, I'm home from America 20 years. Now, I started going out with my now wife, who lived in Belfast at the time, nursing in Belfast. And I would have said it 10, 15 years ago, I would go to Belfast 10 times before I'd go to Dublin.
Why?
10 times.
Firstly,
my heart goes out to that couple, that poor unfortunate couple that got a hiding in Stephen's Green. Now, I go on about why, Joe, see them young lads that are doing this in groups. See if you got one of them on their own. One of them young guys wouldn't even make eye contact. It's just a pack mentality and just pure gorillas. But basically, it would have been about 10 years ago, me and my now wife, we went to some concert or something. I think it was the Coronas in Dublin. And we were walking up the street and there was four young guys coming towards us. And one of the guys in the middle was swinging a belt with a big buckle on it. And I said to my wife at the time, I said, now listen, if anything happens, we're not going to cross the street. We're staying on the side of the footpath. It was a big white footpath. I said, go towards these guys, because if they see any kind of vulnerability, they'll go for you. Now, Joe, I'm 5 foot nothing, but I used to eat the weights as a young lad, so I wouldn't have been afraid of these lads. But I just got a bad edge, and I said to her, if anything happens, you go. You run as fast as you can, wherever you can, I said. And it was just an edge. And listen, Joe, there's bad parts of it. I'm not tarring them all with the one brush. But any time I'm in Dublin doing work on that, I'm in construction. My van's locked at all times. If I'm in traffic, the van's locked on one thing. You know, I'm just always on edge, you know. I'll give you another example, Joe. When I used to go to Belfast, we used to go to Bangor maybe every second weekend. And we used to go for walks around Bangor. Now, I'm just relating to the older ones and the younger ones. You know, the young ones up in Bangor at the time, you know, they had no heed on the troubles or what was going on. And they were all hello and how's things and one thing and another. I just see the young ones now, just the pack mentality. And, you know, on their own, Joe, they'd run a bloody mile.
I spoke to Anjali afterwards and... Yankurt Pridashi is on the line. He's the other man that was attacked with Anjali. Yankurt, you say it is with deep pain, physically and mentally, which is when you contact us, that I'm bringing up a serious incident that happened to me and my friend at the main gate of Stephen's Green. It was Monday the 19th of July at 8:30. Can you just recall and tell your memory of what happened, Yankurt?
Yeah, me and my friend Anjali were standing just in front of the Stephen's Creek gate. We were inside the park, and we were about to leave. And I was just talking with my friend at that moment. These young lads came from the back. Mm-hmm. They tried to just pinch me, like I had my earphones that I was wearing. And when I just stopped them, they punched me on my face. And there were six or seven people. I don't remember the number exactly, but there were six or seven. Those were less than 18 years of age.
Yeah. And they punched you in the face?
Yeah, I got one punch just near my lips. And one was near my ears.
Mm-hmm. And there was blood.
It started blooding all over my mouth and outside as well.
Mm-hmm. And did they say anything to you, Yankurt?
I don't remember. They were like just abusing. That's what I heard at that moment. And my friend was saying just stop, but they were like very aggressive.
And did you hear them? Because Helen said she heard it, Yankurt and Anjali heard it, someone shouting, get her face.
I think they were trying to do something, but we didn't see, and we were facing another side.
Okay.
And someone threw a beer can from the backside, and it went on Anjali's eyes, straight away on her face.
Okay.
And she started screaming after
that. Say with us for a moment. I want to go back to Mary. Mary, the attack down at outside the Borgosh Theatre, very busy spot, very convivial spot, but as you say, you think it's changed. Is there CCTV down there, isn't there?
And there was CCTV, and we went to the guards and they got the CCTV and they reckoned that the boys were between maybe 13 and 15 years old, all in wetsuits, had been jumping in and out of the water. Like, I mean, they didn't even attempt to take the bike off of my son. It was just
an attack.
Just unprovoked and just doing it for the crack. And like, I mean, the guards, I have to say, have been very, very good. They have rang at least 3 times and asked, like, I mean, there's not much more they can do. They can, you know, go to these boys' parents if they can figure out who they are. And I don't think that's going to get them much further, because I think not all you today, but certainly what we've experienced over the last few months down in this area has been absolutely unbelievable. Like, I mean, I have walked out my front door and I could see somebody weeing outside the front door. Yeah. But that was complete. You know, that's been
I was down there one evening, and this group of it was fantastic, actually. This group of young Brazilians
they're came out to dance every Thursday and Friday, and it's great. And it is.
Did the Gardaí let them dance because it's gorgeous?
They do that every Thursday and Friday. The dancing and the music. But it's really when the sun comes out, that's when the kids come in and out of the water. And like that, if they were just doing that, that's fine, you know, and enjoying it. But, like, I mean, not only the way they carry on, the language to people walking by, stones getting thrown at people walking by, it's unbelievable. Okay. Now, for my son, like, it's sort of taken from then, which was about a month ago, to now for him to be getting up the courage to go back out. But he won't ever go. He won't ever cycle that way again.
I know.
He'll cycle around either way, or he'll go up and he'll watch to see who's there, and then he'll go round, you know.
Okay,
and this is their home, like.
Yeah, of course it is. And back to the issue of why the ambulance never arrived for Yankrut and Anjali, even though Yankrut, you were bleeding for 2 hours, I'm told. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was bleeding until I reached the hospital. I was continuously bleeding.
Till you ended up getting a bus up to the hospital. David Hall runs Lifeline Ambulance Service. David, are you aware of the problems with the emergency ambulance service in Dublin?
Yeah, good afternoon, Joe.
Not
enough of them, but I think also there's a medical dispatch system that's being used that's clearly inadequate, where, you know, individuals who are naturally have to be prioritised based on urgency and clinical need. But there's simply not enough ambulances. Every single day, one of my ambulances gets flagged down in Dublin and major cities where people are waiting for ambulances. And it's a reoccurrence over the last number of months. But sadly, what's happened is that the number of people we're seeing are what we would determine priority patients who should be responded to much quicker. So the minister most
are you are you are you allowed to take them, David? You're cruising.
Yeah, we take them. We have no choice. We have an obligation to take them. If we don't have another patient on board, we will take them. And one of my colleagues in another ambulance company had a very bad spinal injury and head injury from a guy who fell off a ladder, but he was waiting for 2 hours and 13 minutes by the time one of the other ambulance companies happened to be flagged down. So, like, it's very serious. It's a very critical situation at the moment, Joe. It's been happening for a long time, but most certainly in the last 6 months. There doesn't seem to be certain level of care being provided to anyone in the country and anyone in the cities. Dublin has a very odd system. It's should have the best system in the world, where it has a dual fire service and ambulance service, where all the fire service staff are also paramedics.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But there's been an ongoing cloud between the HSE and Dublin Fire Brigade and Dublin City Council as to who has responsibility, who is paying for what, who is providing what. Dublin Fire Brigade hasn't been resourced additionally in the last 10 years. They've had no extra resources bar some advanced paramedics. So the city is a danger zone. It's clinically a danger zone for anybody who, unfortunately...
But don't the National Ambulance Service, we're available if every Dublin Fire Brigade emergency ambulance is clogged up waiting at hospitals to get their stretchers back or whatever.
Yeah, you're very familiar with this system for the last 20 years, Joe. Mm. I live in Dublin, and from Dublin, I'm very proud of Dublin, but I'm very nervous in circumstances where I might need an ambulance or a family member of mine might need an ambulance in an emergency situation. I might own an ambulance company. Like today, I've got 7 ambulances sitting waiting for patients based throughout the city centre. I guarantee you that within a half a mile zone of each of those ambulances, I have 3 in Cork, 2 in Galway, somebody would need an ambulance. I'll absolutely guarantee, as has been the case in 15 years, we will not get a phone call to move one of those patients. And this is not about money, because in all those emergency circumstances, we have never charged the HSE for those patients.
Okay.
They will gamble. They will gamble in a live casino with patients and people's lives every day. I have a contract with HSE for 20 years. I've not been rung once in Dublin or the East Coast to respond to a 999 call, irrespective of how critical it is. I have the exact same accreditation, insurance and licensing mm-hmm. as the HSE and the Dublin Fire Brigade.
And are you allowed to use blues and twos?
Everything. I have exactly the same. We do all the ambulances with the exact same specification, the exact same equipment, the exact okay. same storage. Indeed, the head of the National Ambulance Service from the HSE has just joined my staff 3 weeks ago. We have exactly the same as the National Ambulance Service, as the Dublin Fire Brigade, mm-hmm. same accreditation, same insurance.
So what is your contract then with the HSE?
HSE is an open contract. They have the option to call us for emergency calls if they so wish.
Yeah.
They've chosen to decide not to do that. They've chosen to keep those patients away from private ambulance companies. Not just my company. There's another three companies.
Is that a union issue? Or?
I don't know where it's come from, but it's gambling with lives. And it's a high time now that the Minister for Health and the Minister for Dara O'Brien, who got responsibility for the Dublin Fire Brigade, get involved, because this is now costing lives. It's shameful to think that somebody has a potentially long-term eye injury, bleeding, having been the subject of an assault in the absolute centre of the capital of the country, Stephen's Green, and had to get a bus to hospital.
Okay, say what is Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Contacted by two Indian students who were attacked savagely in Dublin last Monday week in St. Stephen's Green, 8:30 at night time. Gardaí didn't come for an hour and a half. The ambulance, emergency ambulance, never arrived. And the two people, one of whom was bleeding profusely, and the other one, Anjali, who you heard earlier, you've heard from both of them now, thought her eyesight she'd lost the sight in one eye because they threw a full can of beer directly into her eye. But the 999 ambulance never arrived, and they actually couldn't get a taxi, and they ended up getting a bus to St. James's Hospital. Carl, good afternoon. Your son, again, St. Stephen's Green Shopping Centre.
Good afternoon, Joe. Yes, this happened last summer.
Okay.
He was on Adverts looking for headphones and had arranged to meet a girl in at St. Stephen's Green Shopping Centre.
Right.
To buy these earphones, because they are quite expensive,
yeah,
they're the Apple ones.
Yeah.
So they arranged to meet right outside the main door of the shopping centre, and the two girls approached them, and then literally 10 seconds later, six yumplas came running around the corner and gave him a severe beating, Joe. They took he'd only bought a brand new baseball cap, they took his iPhone, they took his electric scooter, they took his money. He ended up with a chipped tooth. And his face was very badly swollen, you know. So, but there was nobody. They called the guards and ended up having to walk down to Pier Street Garda Station. And in fairness to the guards, they were brilliant. And they went around all the shops and got the CCTV footage. But my son was terrified to pursue it any further.
Was he? Yeah.
Yes, just, you know, in case they found him on social media, another way they can find each other.
Yeah.
Shortly after that, about 3 months later, he was held up at Bushy Park, and another electric scooter was taken off. Three umpers with knives. So I can tell you, it's rampant, Joe, around the city.
And just explain that worry to me, that he's worried if he does file a formal complaint that they will find out who he is.
Yes.
They'll
find him on social media.
Which is much easier these days than before, you're right.
Yes, it's very easy. Very easy. So he didn't pursue it any further. But again, now he won't go into town anymore. So.
And what was the attack in Bushy Park?
He was going home. He was going to get the bus, and coming out of one of the gates, he was on his electric scooter. He just left his friends. And three fellas standing there with knives and took his scooter off him again. So.
So
yeah.
Electric scooter, well, they're valuable. They're the target.
Yes, yeah. But that and the phones, you know.
Yeah.
But that's what they're taking.
But that being said, they're the target, but your son is the victim.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
The bike is gone, but the trauma and the injuries remain.
Yes, yeah. So he was left with one of his
main front seat chipped. And his face was so badly swollen. I mean, his lips, unbelievable, Joe. It was terrifying to look at.
Okay. Carl, thanks indeed. I hope he has made a full recovery, I hope. But
he's good, but it's just the way things have gone from when I grew up in the 70s and 80s. None of this was going on, you know?
Yeah. Just broad daylight, brazen, glorying in the crime, almost.
Yeah, security guards were standing on the green door, and, you know, they can't get involved, but they saw it all happening, and people were passing by when it was happening and did nothing.
Okay.
And look, I can't blame you for not getting involved. They don't know exactly what's going on either, you know?
Okay. Carl, thanks indeed. Anjali Sharma, who's with us earlier on, and Yankrut Priyadashi, thank you both, and we will try and find out. I didn't know that the HSE have a contract with Lifeline Private Ambulance Company, and that includes answering emergency calls if they're needed. But as David Hall said, it's shocking that in the capital of Ireland in 2021, two young people who were savagely attacked, one bleeding profusely, the other one thinks she's lost her eyesight, should wait for 2 hours and then eventually have to get a bus to an accident and emergency unit. Back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
About random attacks. So far in the Dublin area, I'm sure it's elsewhere over this summer. John, good afternoon.
Yeah, hi Joe, how are you?
Good, you run a shop in Dublin city centre. What's happened?
I do, yeah. So I run a small joke shop just off Henry Street there.
Okay.
And so we attract kids, you know, because we've kind of a bit of everything. So we do, we're like the Simpsons. We have stuff for adults, a bit of a joke, stuff that kids won't get, but adults will get the joke.
Okay.
So anyway, so it's the kind of a shop people come in and spend some time in rather than buy and laugh and joke. And then they might buy some. It's like an impulse shop.
Okay.
So we constantly get young gangs of young lads and stuff and girls all together. But since COVID, it seems to have got extremely aggressive. I have girls working for me. They ring me and say, I have to close the shop. I feel there's guys here, they won't leave the shop.
Yeah.
They've kicked my staff, they spit on them, screaming abuse. Obviously, I heard the girls call them the slush kind of thing, that for that Indian girl, like, that's nothing. That's like, and we're off Henry Street, it's the biggest shopping centre. There's no, like, if we ring the police, like, say if I caught someone shoplifting, Joe, usually what you do is you catch them and you take the product off them and then you hold them for the police to come, right?
Yeah, of course.
If you try to hold one of these kids or anybody for an hour and a half or an hour before the police come, their friends start kicking you, you start getting punched from behind, you get other people who know nothing about what happened screaming at you to let the child go and that you're abusing this child, that he's only 12. Like, I'll just be honest, when your producer rang me, I nearly got it for a second. I had to check. I nearly start into tears because we have real life problems with landlord. Like, landlord's ringing you. He wants to get paid the rent. You know, it's been so bad with COVID. We're behind in our payments. Like, and then next minute, you have to telling you, like, I have to close the shop at 4:30 because that's these young guys screaming, kicking the shutter, telling you that, come on outside, we're waiting for you outside. And they've no problem hitting girls. Like, so say if I'm there and I say, lads, you're not coming out, please move. No, don't put your hands on me. Like, in a shop is my shop. I'm entitled to ask people to leave and I'm also entitled to help them out if they won't leave, just like kind of a security guard. But you try to do that, you'll get them all, like, it's gas for the 12-year-olds to put it up to you. But they do. And they'll start hitting and kicking and spitting. Yeah. Like, Joe, to be honest with you, mate, I've 9 years on that street. I find it much easier to deal with any of... There's a lot of addicts on the north side. I don't know. They're all on the north side, it seems like. They're not seem to be on the south side. We have to deal with them as shopkeepers every day. But I'm dealing with them 9 years now. I find them so much easier to deal with than any of these young groups of kids.
And you mentioned the street you were on.
Mm-hmm.
Which is Mary Street. I don't...
Liffey Street.
Oh, so Liffey Street.
The side entrance, turn. It's where Hector...
Well, great location. Yeah. And you say it's... you're a joke shop, but this is mayhem, and they just...
mayhem. Now, nothing could mayhem happen for the whole day. Like, literally every day now. Do you know what we conversation we had? Did anything happen today? Every yeah. day now, we have the conversation with the staff. Did anything, or the new thing, and I hate to use it, did any AHs come in today? You know? And what age were they? So, like, we caught them.
What's an AH?
An asshole. Sorry, any little assholes. You know what I mean? Because they're little... They're little 10-year, 12-year-olds with no manners. Not all of them. There's some of them are, like, to be honest with you, some of them are grand. And there's some in the group will try and control the others to tell them. Because I tell them, lads, you mess with this, you're barred from the shop, you're never coming in again. That doesn't mean anything anymore. When we were told that when we were kids, we're just like, the others would all say, stop, we don't want to be barred, you know?
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem, nothing seems to matter.
And like, they're not afraid. It's not always Gardaí on foot patrol in Henry Street.
No, that's all gone now for some reason. I get other shops to ring it. You cannot get them. There's girls, like, there's some real good, like my brand's a homegrown, I'm independent, I've created my own brand. But say there's some international brands there, and they have different people from different nationalities working in, what I mean is they're no Irish, right? I would go over to them, and they're being terrorised sometimes. And they're just, they say they're Asians or wherever they're from, it doesn't matter. And I'd be looking at them, and they kind of, because I come over and I can turn into, shut up, lads, get out here, what are you doing? You know, I'm not afraid to speak to them. The girls start kind of saying, well, thank you. Like, I don't know why a uniformed, what it takes to have, I don't know how much rates are being paid on Henry Street to put a guard on one end of the street and another one on. When they were selling cigarettes and they were selling lighters on those streets, you couldn't stand, you couldn't look left or right before you were lifted. You remember all the years ago in the 80s and the early 90s, they'd be selling everything on the street illegally with no license.
Yeah.
There was guards everywhere. And now it feels like if you ring a police, like, and again, you want to be dying on the ground with blood everywhere before you get someone in 20, and I'm telling you, it'll probably take you still 20 minutes. Like, and I'm not blaming the guards. The guards are, you go to store streets. Like, I've been down there because we've had to report certain shoplifting and so on. They're run off their feet.
Yeah.
They really are. Like, I don't really blame the guards, but the system is broken. And we as shop, like, I'm paying 14.5 grand in rates every year. For what, like? Yeah. Like, if you compare my street to, and I'm not blaming the council either, but you play how clean my street is, pedestrian street. Compare that to Grafton Street. It's an absolute, I hate to say it, but the ground is filthy. There's chewing gum everywhere. There's grass growing all around the lights of the just feels neglected. We feel neglected over here, and we feel neglected by the guards, because you do anything on Grafton Street, there'll be guards in 10 minutes and they'll lift you out of there. It feels that way. Maybe I'm wrong, but it feels that way. I want to go. I don't want to continue in this business anymore. I don't feel like I'm working only for a wage, if we even get a wage. When you bring in, sometimes I'm better off putting on my blinkers and pretending I'm actually doing okay with the business, but that's all, you know?
Is your business in danger?
Of course it is. Like many other small independent businesses that just gone through COVID. Yeah, we've a load of expenses that have stacked up over the last 18 months. You know, and we're going around with our cap in hand to suppliers, to landlords, to everybody to say, you know, which a lot of them are good. Give us credit, give it to us. We're going to, and a lot of them are good. But then you go and try and just deal with, like, it's tough. And it's only till you actually witness it, Joe, in front of you. Like, I've seen, like, people, I've seen tourists, now I know before COVID, but say before COVID, absolutely horrified.
I'm looking, I know you say gravity, but I'm looking at the calls on the screen. We'll get to them tomorrow. We're over time. But like a man attacked by at lunchtime on Stephen's Green with a fellow with a brick who knocked him unconscious, believe it or not. But anyway, we'll talk to him tomorrow. John, stay safe.
I hope people
support.
Joe.
And thanks for making it. I hope that people support that. It's a very unusual shop, the joke shop on Mary Street. Very unusual shop, but it's great fun unless you have to walk there. Back tomorrow, 1:45. Lisa Meadbury, produced Ray Darcy next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. For more on our 212 offers, visit your local Kia dealer or log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.